He was a cop. State police in an unmarked car. He didn't say so, but it was pretty obvious. Nice enough guy. He picked me up way to the north, almost in South Dakota. He told me he would have to drop me off in the middle of nowhere because all he was doing was heading down and back. We didn't talk about reasons, and I didn't know he meant he was going back immediately. But that's what he did. He pulled over, he let me out, and then 2 seconds later he turned around and took off again, right back the way we had come.
Why would he?
GPS and politics, Reacher said. That was my first guess. A big state like Nebraska, I figured there could be bitching and moaning about which parts get attention and which don't. So I thought maybe they were defending themselves in advance. They could come out with still frames from their GPS systems to show they've been everywhere in the state at one time or another. Cop cars all have trackers now, and all that kind of stuff can be subpoenaed if they get called in front of a committee. Then a little later on, I changed my mind. I wondered if they'd had a bullshit call from someone, and they knew they weren't going to do anything about it, but they still needed to cover their asses by being able to prove they had showed up, at least. Then later still, I wondered if it hadn't been such a bullshit call after all, and whether it was you who had made it.
It was me. 4 days ago. And it wasn't a bullshit call. I told them everything I was thinking. Why didn't the guy even get out of his car?
Prejudice and local knowledge, Reacher said. I bet you mentioned Seth beat you.
Well, yes, I did. Because he did.
Therefore, they ignored everything else you said. They put it down to a wronged wife making stuff up to get her husband in trouble. Cops can be like that sometimes. It ain't right, but that's how it is. And they certainly weren't going to tackle the domestic issue itself. Not against the Duncans, because of local knowledge. Dorothy Coe told me some neighborhood kids joined the state police. So either they were asked, or else the story had already gotten around some other way, but in either case the message was the same, which was, in that corner of that county, you can't mess with the Duncans.
I don't believe it.
You try, Reacher said. Along with everything else, you have to remember that. You tried to do the right thing. They drove on and blew through what counted as the downtown area, past the Chamber of Commerce billboard, past the aluminum coach diner, past the gas station with its Texaco sign and its 3 service bays, past the hardware store and the liquor store and the bank and the tire shop and the John Deere dealership and the grocery and the pharmacy, past the water tower, past McNally Street, past the signpost to the hospital and onward into territory Reacher hadn't seen before. The van's engine muttered low, and the tires hummed, and from time to time Reacher thought he heard sounds from the load space behind him. People moving around, talking occasionally, even laughing. Beside him, Eleanor Duncan concentrated on the dark road ahead, and he watched her from the corner of his eye. Then an hour and 60 miles later, they saw bright vapor lights at the highway cloverleaf and big green signs pointing west and east. Eleanor slowed and stopped, and Reacher got out and waved her away. She used the first ramp west toward Denver and Salt Lake City, and he walked under the bridge and set up on the eastbound ramp, 1 foot on the shoulder and 1 in the traffic lane, and he stuck out his thumb and smiled and tried to look friendly. This is Dick Hill. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Worth Dying For by Lee Child. Executive producers, Kelly Gilday and Dan Musselman. Text copyright, 2010 by Lee Child. Production copyright, 2010, Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.